Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Richard Brookhiser's George Washington on Leadership is a compact work of leadership history rather than a comprehensive biography of the first U.S. president. It interprets Washington through three executive roles: commander of the Continental Army, president of the United States, and manager of the Mount Vernon estate and wider business interests. Brookhiser's purpose is practical as well as historical. He examines how Washington exercised authority, acquired knowledge despite limited formal schooling, managed weaknesses, and operated under public scrutiny and institutional constraint. The book treats leadership not as a collection of timeless slogans, but as a demanding practice shaped by responsibilities, information, temperament, and consequences. Its central premise is that Washington's achievements were not simply products of innate greatness. They also arose from habits of self-command, deliberation, learning, and sustained attention to operations. By moving among war, government, and private enterprise, Brookhiser presents a cross-domain study of executive judgment. The result is aimed at readers interested in American history, while also inviting managers, public servants, and organizational leaders to assess how historical examples can inform present-day decisions. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, leadership is examined across military, political, and commercial authority. Brookhiser's defining structural choice is to analyze Washington as an executive in three distinct settings: military, command, national government, and private business. This broad frame matters because it tests leadership against different kinds of problems. A general must preserve an army, make decisions amid uncertainty, and balance tactical risks against strategic survival. A president must lead within laws, work through other office holders, and establish precedents rather than merely issue orders. A landowner and businessman must attend to property, labor production, correspondence, and long-term financial stewardship. Washington's authority, therefore, did not rest on one transferable technique or on military prestige alone. Each arena imposed different limits and demanded a different use of judgment. The book's practical value lies in this comparison: leaders often overgeneralize from unsuccess, whereas Washington had to adjust his conduct to the task and institution before him. Brookhiser also resists reducing Washington to a ceremonial founder frozen in public memory. The emphasis on operational responsibility makes him a working executive who had to keep organizations functioning. For modern readers, the point is not that contemporary institutions replicate 18th century ones. It is that durable leadership can be assessed by how a person handles changing contexts while maintaining standards of responsibility, legitimacy, and purpose. Secondly, self-knowledge turns personal limits into a leadership discipline. A central lesson attributed to Washington is not effortless mastery, but deliberate self-assessment. Brookhiser emphasizes that Washington faced limitations, made mistakes, and had to determine what he could improve, delegate, or avoid. This is a more demanding idea than the conventional image of a flawless national hero. Effective leadership requires an accurate view of one's own abilities because poor self-knowledge distorts decisions. A leader may take on work beyond his competence, ignore corrective evidence, or treat a temporary strength as a universal answer. Washington's development is presented as an ongoing process of action followed by reflection. Experience became valuable only when he used it to revise his understanding of situations and of himself. His limited formal education is relevant here. Rather than treating education as a fixed credential, the book points to his continued reading in fields connected with his responsibilities, including farming, military affairs, politics, and history. The underlying mechanism is self-directed learning tied to practical demands. Brookhiser's account thus offers a corrective to leadership writing that treats confidence as sufficient. Washington's example suggests that authority is strengthened by disciplined preparation and by candor about limitations. In contemporary terms, the lesson is not self-doubt for its own sake, but a habit of converting error, incomplete knowledge, and feedback into better judgment. Thirdly, strategic patience matters more than dramatic displays of command. Washington's military career provides the book's clearest setting for distinguishing leadership from theatrical decisiveness. As commander of the Continental Army, his task was not simply to win individual engagements. It was to preserve a force capable of continuing the war and securing independence. That strategic condition made restraint, endurance, and the management of scarce resources central features of command. Brookhiser's leadership lens is useful because it directs attention away from a simplistic catalog of victories and toward the responsibilities attached to an executive position. A leader can face intense pressure for visible action, while recognizing that an ill-timed action may endanger the larger mission. Washington's example consequently highlights the relationship between means and ends. Plans must be judged not only by boldness, but by whether an organization can sustain their costs. The same reasoning travels beyond war. In business or public administration, leaders may be rewarded rhetorically for rapid, Conspicuous moves even when institutional capacity, cash, personnel, or political legitimacy is inadequate. Brookhiser does not offer Washington as a formula for inaction. Instead, the military material supports a more precise principle patience can be an active executive choice when it protects the essential assets needed for long-term success. Strategic leadership includes knowing what must not be squandered. Fourthly, the presidency illustrates authority, constrained by institutions and precedent. In treating Washington's presidency as an executive career, Brookhiser places institutional restraint at the center of leadership. Washington led a new constitutional government, whose practices were not yet fully settled. The office required him to act, but also to consider what his actions would establish for successors and for public expectations. This makes the presidential portion of the book different from a study of personal influence alone. Executive power is not merely the ability to obtain compliance. It is the responsibility to use authority in ways that preserve the credibility and durability of the institution. Washington's role in the founding era gives this question exceptional clarity, since early presidential choices could acquire the force of precedent. The broader lesson is that leaders inherit systems they did not create completely and should not treat those systems as obstacles to personal ambition. They must work through procedures, advisors, competing interests, and legitimate limits. This focus also complicates the popular notion that strong leadership always means unilateral leadership. Brookhiser's Washington is significant, precisely because command had to be adapted to a republic, where authority depended on constitutional roles and public trust rather than permanent personal control. Readers in government, nonprofit, and corporate settings can apply the distinction by asking whether a decision solves an immediate problem while weakening the norms, succession processes, or accountability structures on which the organization depends. Lastly, Mount Vernon reveals the operational work behind Washington's public leadership. Brookhiser's inclusion of Washington as a businessman and estate manager prevents leadership from remaining an abstract discussion of grand public events. Mount Vernon and Washington's associated agricultural and real estate interests required close attention to the ordinary mechanics of administration land, production, employees, livestock, records, maintenance, and correspondence. The book's point is not that private wealth automatically proves executive talent. Rather, this domain demonstrates that leadership is partly operational objectives fail when leaders neglect the practical systems through which work is completed. Washington's agricultural interests show a sustained engagement with improvement, information gathering, and oversight, while his extensive correspondence illustrates the administrative burden behind both private and public authority. This perspective is especially valuable because leadership literature can overemphasize vision while understating execution. A strategy must be translated into routines, responsibilities, and feedback from the people closest to the work. At the same time, modern readers should approach this section with historical care. Washington's estate existed within the morally indefensible system of enslaved labor, a reality that cannot be separated from the conditions of his wealth and operations. The leadership analysis is therefore not a blanket endorsement of the enterprise. It is a study of administrative practice that should be read alongside the profound ethical contradiction of Washington's position as a slaveholder. That tension limits any uncomplicated business model interpretation. In conclusion, George Washington on Leadership will appeal most to readers who want a concise, historically grounded examination of leadership rather than either a full-scale Washington biography or a contemporary management manual. Students of the founding period can benefit from its attention to Washington's work as a commander president and estate manager. Managers and public sector leaders can use its framework to think about self-knowledge, institutional responsibility, strategic patience, and execution. Brookhiser's most useful contribution is comparative. Instead of extracting isolated maxims from famous episodes, he asks what Washington's responsibilities looked like across sharply different organizations and what habits allowed him to operate in each. That approach makes the book more concrete than inspirational portraits that simply praise Washington's character, while remaining more accessible and tightly focused than comprehensive scholarly biographies. It also distinguishes the book from leadership titles built primarily around modern corporate cases. Its examples arise from wartime survival, constitutional government, and the management of a large 18th century estate. Readers should nevertheless recognize its limits. The book is selective by design, and its leadership emphasis does not substitute for a complete account of Washington's life, political conflicts, or the moral realities of slavery connected to Mount Vernon. Within its chosen scope, however, it offers a useful account of executive practice leadership as preparation, restraint, institutional judgment, and continuing attention to the work required to turn authority into durable results. If you would like to support Richard Brookhiser, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.